Chapter 2 Little Mouse. Ekon was counting again. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. He stood alone at the window of an old apothecary, its sagging ceiling so low that it nearly brushed the top of his head. Of course, he hadn't known when he'd first arrived that it was an apothecary at all. But now he saw the signs everywhere. He counted. 46, 47, 48. Dusted jars stacked along the built-in shelves, their liquid contents murky and ominous. In one corner of the room, there was a small hearth. In another, there was a wooden table with two chairs, the kind a couple might have sat at long ago after a hard day's work. It was impossible to know exactly how long it had been since the shop had been operational, but the sour, sweet blend of old ointments, salves, and dried produce, long gone, still staled the air. He inhaled and nearly retched. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. He drummed his fingers against his side, counted the dust motes gathered on the window's mud brick frame, the spidering cracks that ran along the room's walls like line-thin serpents. Only when he was finished did he actually look outside, taking in the torrent of rain pouring down just feet away from him. He took in its smell, its sound, tried to find a cadence in its steady patter. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Between the drops, he envisioned the faces of three people, not six, not nine, but three. Always three. 1. He imagined a girl with chestnut skin. She had a heart-shaped face that framed a small, broad nose and full lips, and there was a mischievous glint in her eyes. That was Kofi, his friend. 2. He imagined a young man who looked a lot like him, but different. His face was composed of night sky eyes set even above a long nose with the precise top fade haircut befitting a warrior. That was Kamau, his older brother. 3. He imagined an old man, one with unruly white eyebrows and a mouth crinkled with laugh lines. Ekon shivered as that face transformed, as the smile turned wicked and cruel. That was the man who had been his mentor, Brother Ugo. No, Ekon corrected himself. There was no Brother Ugo. Brother Ugo had never existed. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. He tried to repress what he knew would come next, the threads of new memory knotting themselves in his mind. He caught quick glimpses of imagery, snatched fragments of the words it still hurt for him to recall. I knew you would be different. Knew you wouldn't fail me, whispered the old man. In his head, Ekon saw himself standing in a beautiful garden, watching the flowers wilt and die. The muscles in his throat constricted, and he made himself count until they relaxed again. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. You were the perfect combination. The old man's voice was reed thin in his ear. Keen, desperate for approval. It made you easy to mold into what I needed. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Brother Ugo hadn't been real. Ekon screwed his eyes shut and counted faster, focusing on the numbers. Numbers never changed. Numbers stayed the same. Numbers always made sense. Except that now, they didn't. Brother Ugo had been an imposter. How many signs had he missed? The old man had been behind everything, and how many clues had been right there all along? Sometimes Ekon counted none. Other times, he counted 3,000. His fingers tapped a faster beat against his thigh. When a clap of thunder boomed overhead, his breath grew shallow and his vision tunneled. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2. You shouldn't be near the window. Ekon turned, his head snapping in the direction of the croaking voice that had just pulled him back to reality. An old woman was standing a few feet away, watching him tentatively. White hair peeked out from her head wrap, and there were deep lines in her face. Even after 3 days together, Ekon still hadn't gotten used to how quietly she moved. It's not safe, she went on, glancing over his shoulder. Someone could see you. Ekon took one large step away from the window. Sorry. Temba was still looking at him with a shrewd expression. You're sure you want to go? Yes. The tunnel vision was getting better now. Ekon forced his heartbeat to settle. I'm ready. One of Temba's gray brows rose. You've healed from the splendor poisoning fast, she tutted. But you're still recovering from your physical wounds. Ekon stood straighter. In the last 2 days, most of his scrapes and cuts had begun to scab. Notably, the tender skin under his jaw was almost clear of bruising. But there were other wounds beneath his skin, the ones he couldn't see but felt every time he moved. I'm fine, he lied. Temba's lips pursed like she'd just sucked on a lemon. It's risky. Temba, please, I want to go. I can carry more than you. He wished there was a way to explain the way he was feeling, but he didn't know how to say aloud that now more than ever in his life, he needed to feel capable, competent, useful. He held her gaze a beat, and perhaps she saw the unspoken words in his eyes, because her expression abruptly softened to one of reluctant resignation. Keep your head down and your hood up, she said, and take this. She withdrew a small coin purse from her tunic's pocket and pressed it into his palm. Temba. Ekon looked down at his hand as she curled his fingers over the purse. I can't take this. You can and will, she said sharply. You've got no way to pay, and we can't risk stealing or bartering, not with the way things are right now. Ekon swallowed. There was a fierceness in Temba's eyes that he recognized, and he realized they were just like Kofi's eyes. Of course they are, he reminded himself. They're related. 3 days together hadn't been enough time to process that. Take your time and practice caution. Stay hidden if you have to, Temba continued. And remember, if you even think you've been seen. I won't be, said Ekon. He didn't let her finish the sentence because he knew what the old woman was going to say. If you even think you've been seen, don't worry about food or supplies or me. Save yourself. Except that wasn't an option. Not now. 1, 2, 3, Ekon counted. This was technically his third day with Temba, and his presence here had depleted her food supply. They were out of options, and there was no room for error. He didn't wait for Temba to say more as he grabbed an empty sack and a still slightly damp hooded cloak. It was too small for him, but it would have to do. I'll be back, he said over his shoulder. Then, without waiting for a reply, he swung the shop's door open and charged into the torrent. He was soaked in seconds. Mud and ankle-deep puddles sloshed around Ekon's feet as he joined the steady flow of people moving purposefully in the rain. Overhead, the pewter gray sky with its spidering black veins suggested early evening, but in reality, it was only midday, another consequence of monsoon season. Ekon slipped in the mud, scrunching his face as he accidentally bit his tongue and drew blood. It was hard to believe it now, what he'd once liked this time of year. Monsoon season in Lycosa was a headache for the brothers of the Temple of Lycosa, thanks to an uptick in beggars seeking refuge in the temple. But Ekon had looked forward to it. Heavy rains meant no drills or sparring practice on the temple's lawns were possible, so those hours had been repurposed for the things he preferred. Quiet hours spent in the library, occasional paper boat races with his brother. Those moments now felt ripped from another life, a life that was gone. Ekon veered right, taking a sharp turn down one of the narrower roads that fed into the main markets. It wasn't technically the fastest way to get there, but it was safest. He couldn't risk being followed, even in the Shafu district. The throngs of people began to thicken as he reached the markets, and he was careful not to walk too fast or too slow. He heard the telltale sounds first, the violent flapping of tents in the wind, intermingled with the cries of peddlers shouting their bargains. He glanced up and counted. There were 16 tents arranged, 4 on each side, to form a square. Earlier, Temba had told him what they needed, and Ekon wasted no time moving through the market to procure the items from her list. He bought secondhand water gourds, 2 cheap burlap sacks, and an assortment of dried meats and fruits. It reminded him that, not so long ago, he and Kofi had been here together in this market, preparing for their hunt in the greater jungle. That felt like another life, too. He'd just grabbed the last of the items on his list when 2 voices rose above the din. "Shame they didn't allow for stoning." The first weathered voice came from an older-sounding woman. "I've got a good arm for it." Ekon's ears perked up as he slowed, eyes searching through the crowd. They eventually landed on 2 women standing beneath a covered stall, clearly waiting for the rain to let up. He'd been right in guessing that the first woman he'd heard was older. Gray hairs streaked her waist-length braids. The woman she was standing beside looked slightly younger. "I think it's better that Father Olufemi destroyed the beast in private," she said, bowing her head with reverence. "It was an evil creature, a demon." They were talking about the Shetani. Ekon looked away, but couldn't stop himself from stepping closer to listen. His palms grew clammy as he recalled all that had happened just days before. Kofi, Brother Ugo, Adia, the battle in the Sky Garden. "I suppose it was," the old woman agreed. When Ekon stole a glance in her direction, he saw she was nodding slowly. "Gods bless the sons of the Six. I don't know what we would do without them." Ekon moved away from the women, trying to ignore the fresh anger roiling in his stomach. Of course Father Olufemi and the Sons of the Six had found a way to cover everything up. By saying the Shetani had been destroyed privately, their integrity was protected. There was no longer a monster terrorizing the city, and it would be the warriors who received the credit for its demise. The Lycosans would never know the real truth, that there had never been a monster at all, only men with horrid secrets. "And you were one of them," whispered a voice in Ekon's head. "For years you trained with them, lived with them. They were your family." Ekon felt that churning anger turn into something else, a sudden wave of nausea, sour on his tongue. He knew it wasn't real, the taste of shame, but it was still difficult to swallow. He thought of all the years spent watching and admiring the Sons of the Six, volunteering to clear their plates and clean their weapons. How many nights had he cleaned daggers used to cut down children, clean the plates of murderers? How many signs had he missed? In the pelting rain, his breath began to grow short, more labored. There was a familiar tightness in his chest that made it harder and harder for his lungs to expand, and his mouth went dry as he recognized the preliminary signs of a panic attack. his hands balled into tight fists as a darkness crept into the corners of his vision, and he ground his teeth together, frustrated. Not now. Not now. This can't happen right now. He couldn't breathe anymore. There was an old man's laughter in his head, cold and mirthless. The din of the market was fading. He felt as though he was on the verge of falling. And then something caught his eye. The black fuzziness at the periphery of Ekon's vision receded like a tide as his gaze zeroed in on a girl a few feet away from him. Her skin was the color of a marula tree. Her face, a composite of two crow-black eyes, a wide nose, and bow-like lips. A cloak covered most of her head, though its hood was pushed back just enough to see a hint of curly black hair. At first, Ekon wondered what about her had caught his attention, but then he understood. There hadn't necessarily been any one thing about the way the girl looked that had made him notice her. It was because of the way she moved. Everyone else in the market was milling about, unhurried in their browsing, but this girl walked with purpose, her eyes set straight ahead. She stepped around two textile merchants, and Ekon noted that she was carrying a small satchel on her shoulder, one she seemed intent on shielding from the rain. She had just passed the place where he was standing when he noticed something else. At once, his gaze narrowed. Some feet behind her, hanging far enough back to avoid detection, two men were following the girl, their eyes fixed steadily on her back. Ekon tensed. He could guess what kinds of men those were and what they had in mind for the girl. "Stay where you can be seen," he wanted to tell her. His heart sank as the girl did the very opposite, turning onto one of the side streets leading out of the marketplace and disappearing behind a corner. He watched as the men quickened their steps and followed. "It's not your business," said the practical part of his brain, the one still thinking of his groceries. "It doesn't concern you. Get back to Temba." That voice in his head was right. The better thing to do, the smarter thing to do, was to turn around. But then, without warning, his feet began to move, propelling him in the direction the girl had gone. He walked down it quickly, turned the same corner, and stopped. "Come on, girl. We're not asking for much," said a gravelly voice. "Just share what's in the bag, and we'll be on our way." Ekon pressed himself against the wall. The alley he was looking down was a dead end, and he could now see that the girl from the market was backed up against it, clutching at the strap of her satchel. Her dark eyes were flinty, but the tremble in her chin gave her away. "Back off!" Her voice was too shrill to have any bite. "I said no!" "Or what?" said one of the men. "You're going to do something, little mouse?" He made a grab at the sack, and the girl swiped, smacking his hand away, hard. The man hissed, while the other chuckled. "Ah, our little mouse has the spirit of a viper," he said. "At least that'll make things interesting." The other man was not laughing. He lunged, and the girl jumped away, just barely keeping her sack out of his reach. Almost immediately, she had to swivel in the other direction as the first man tried to snatch it. Back and forth, the men began taking turns grabbing at her. Ekon's heart sank. He'd lived in Lakoso long enough to understand what they were doing. There was a reason men like these were called street hyenas. They worked the same way real hyenas did, toying with their prey and wearing it down before they made their kill. He had no doubt this girl could hold her own against just one of them, but she was no match for a well-practiced strategy. One of them swiped again, and her dark eyes took on a wild, frantic quality. Ekon's heart seized. She looked more and more like a trapped animal. He let his own sack slip from his fingers as he stepped forward. "Leave her alone." All three of them, the two men and the girl, looked up in equal surprise. It was one of the men who spoke first.
Who are you?
Ekon swallowed.
I said, leave her alone.
The second man looked back and forth between Ekon and the girl before cracking a toothy smile.
Looks like the little mouse has a boyfriend.
He regarded Ekon with amusement.
This should be entertaining.
He's scrawny, barely a man, said the first.
We'll make short work of him.
Barely a man.
They were only words, but Ekon felt each one like a stab between his ribs. He winced at them and felt something waking in the deepest chamber of his chest. The words echoed in his mind.
Barely a man.
Days ago, Tamba had found an old tunic for him to wear. It was clean, plain, and on the whole, it fit well. Ekon only now realized, though, what that tunic meant. He wasn't wearing the uniform of a son of the six anymore. He was no longer looked at as a man.
1, 2, 3.
The muscles in his jaw ached, and his nostrils flared as he watched the smiles slip from the two men's faces.
Easy, boy, one of them said, holding up his hands. We don't want any trouble.
Ekon didn't give him the chance to finish his sentence. With both hands, he shoved the first man in his chest as hard as he could, watching with satisfaction as he tripped over his feet and then ran. In his periphery, he saw the second man start toward him, but Ekon was faster. Years of training at the Temple of Lycosa returned to him like an old friend, familiar. Deflect, disarm, dismantle. With ease, he dodged the man's clumsy attempt at a right hook, feinted, then countered with a cross and a series of jabs. Ekon heard the breath leave the man's body, the telling click as his knuckles connected with a jawbone. Pain ricocheted through his hand. The man dropped to the ground, moaning as he curled into a ball and tried to cradle the side of his head, but Ekon still fell upon him, pressing his knee into the man's torso so that he couldn't escape.
Barely a man, he said through his teeth. You'll see for yourself who's barely a man.
He brought his fist down, and at last he named the monster coming to life in his chest. It was rage, and it roared its approval as his fists rained down on the man, blow after blow.
I trained you well.
Ekon stopped, cringing against the voice that had entered his mind. It sounded like Brother Ugo's.
Young and athletic, smart and meticulous, said the old man. You were the perfect combination. Easy to mold into what I needed.
Ekon reeled, nausea climbing up his throat. He blinked several times until Brother Ugo's face was gone. He took in his surroundings, then looked down. The man was still pinned beneath him. His face was unrecognizable, his breath shallow. Ekon stared at his own hands. They were bloody, and they ached. A sheen of sweat slicked his brow, followed by a clammy chill. In the darkness, Ekon's eyes wandered. Then they settled on the girl. She was still standing at the end of the alley, a few feet away from him, motionless. Ekon had expected to see some hint of emotion on her face, fear, or perhaps even repulsion. But he saw none there. The girl's expression was utterly neutral. She'd pulled the cloak's hood back over her face and hugged her satchel to her chest. Several seconds passed before Ekon slowly stood. The girl tensed.
It's okay.
Ekon raised his hands quickly, all too aware that he was standing beside a man's unconscious body.
I won't hurt you. I just wanted to help.
Without warning, the girl sprung to life, moving faster than he could ever hope to. In one moment, she was cornered at the end of the alley. In the next, She turned on her heel and vanished around the corner, leaving Ekon alone in the dark.